Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I have really been looking forward to this interview. Usually on the show, I'm interviewing people who are past 50 because my beat has really been creativity as we pass midlife. But every so often, I run into somebody who is so creative in so many original ways, not 50, actually pretty far away from 50, but has such a story that I want to learn from it. So my guest today, Maya Solera, is 30, and she spans a remarkable array of creative endeavors. So listen here, because I don't think you've ever met anyone who spans the range that Maya does. First off, she is a graduate of Vashon High School, and I'm looking at her right now. Thanks, Maya. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm honored to be here.
Yeah, it's so fun. You're a graduate of Vashon High School, and you were on the rowing team, and you were so good that you got a scholarship at the University of San Diego. Is that right?
That's right.
So you rowed your way through college, but not just rowing, because it sounds like you also took up weight training and weightlifting in college. Am I right there?
That was a mandatory part of rowing.
Oh, it is, because you have to be strong.
You must.
You must be strong. So it was a mandatory part, but then you got good at it.
I do love it very much.
And did you compete with the weightlifting as well?
I have. So I actually have my first powerlifting competition coming up in May. Prior to this, I've competed in CrossFit and Olympic weightlifting, not in the Olympics, but the sport of Olympic weightlifting, which is the clean, the jerk, and the snatch.
Oh my gosh. It's not even a language I know, except that I think I have seen you at the Vashon Athletic Club. And this is for real, folks. She does lift. It's amazing. So you've got the rowing and the weightlifting. And then in your bio, I saw you also trained fighters. Is that
true?
Okay, so what's that?
Oh my gosh. Well, I had an incredible opportunity in college. I became infatuated with my MMA instructor and would do anything he suggested.
Oh, MMA is?
Mixed martial arts.
Okay, great. So the uninitiated amongst us.
I found that space so engaging and diverting. I was in a really hard time in my life. And the stress of rowing combined with the stressors in my life externally, I needed a diversion. And going to MMA class at the school, I got to take care of one of my mandatory extracurriculars and meet some new people and just like express skills that I hadn't known I had until that point and practice them and become better at them. And I ended up working for that instructor elsewhere at essentially a fight camp, which is where a group of athletes trains a competing or about to compete fighter. So I was sparring with people spanning weight classes from 100 pounds to 250 pounds. And
oh my gosh. And you weren't afraid of getting hurt?
Never. I was never afraid of getting hurt. I think that comes from the audacity of youth.
Or naivety.
Or yes, that too.
Yeah.
And luckily, I never got hurt from the sport itself. I got hurt from showing off.
Yeah.
Got some injuries in that way. Rowing was actually much more injurious than MMA
really?
Was.
Yeah.
I never competed in MMA, though. I only practiced.
Yeah. I would imagine rowing would put you at risk for repetitive stress.
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so amazing. So I am interviewing Maya Solera. And so far we've established that she had a background in rowing, a rowing scholarship. She did weightlifting. She competed and she did fight training, which is all, it's just amazing because these are not things that your typical female, you know, Vashon High School graduate goes off and does. But this is where it also gets interesting. You've also done acting and singing, right?
True.
So bring me up to speed. How did that enter in? Because it's funny, I have a friend who has coached fighters, but for the stage.
Ooh.
I can put you in touch.
That's cool.
An interesting thing, because I bet you would do really well at that. But first tell me, how did you go into acting and singing?
Well, I saw Drama Doc's production of Annie.
Yeah.
My peer.
How old were you then?
I must have been like 8 or 9, not very old, you know.
Yeah.
I was always singing and rather exuberant, as a child is, but I hadn't really been exposed to the stage that much. So I went and I saw Annie with my family, and my soccer teammate, Megan Hackett, she was playing Annie. And I saw her do it, and I thought, that is the funnest thing I've ever seen. It was so inspiring and amazing. I want to do what she's doing. I want to be where she is right now. I've never had so much FOMO in my life. And so after that, I started auditioning for things, and I was in Oliver, and I was in a lot of shows as a kid. Growing up, I started doing more serious musical theater, so I got to play The Witch in Into the Woods, directed by Elizabeth Ripley. That was so exciting. Sondheim's music is very complex, mm-hmm, and very juicy, very fun to chew on. I got to do Melpomene in Xanadu at the high school my senior year. That was really fun. And when I went to college, I did audition for this group called the Choral Scholars. There are two groups like this in the nation, or there were when I first went to college, that offer choral scholarships. It's a small chorus group, and they offered me a scholarship, and I did ask my college rowing coach, can I major in music and be on the team? And she said, yep, go for it.
Oh, fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy combo, but
amazing, yeah. As it turned out, I did have to choose rowing over music at that, mm-hmm, point, because the class schedule would have required me to miss practice, which is just a non-starter.
Yeah.
And I couldn't afford to pay for school with the partial scholarship that the Choral Scholars offered me. So I chose rowing, and I'm glad I did. It was a really hard, fulfilling experience.
Right.
And
one that's probably best done when you're in college or in your early 20s.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Whereas you can sing all your life, you know.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, hopefully. I hope so.
And I want to just side note, because people here on Vashon, many of them probably saw you in the Rocky Horror Picture Show. So just remember that you may not know that you've seen Maya, but if you went to that performance, you've seen Maya. So let's go back.
Okay.
You were doing that. That's just a great side note. And that blew me away, because I'd seen you at the gym, but then it was like, oh my God, she's on stage. She's great. And what a wild role that is, you know. But we'll go to that. So take me back. You're in college.
Okay.
You're doing the special chorale.
Oh, it was so fun.
Mm.
So I got to do that for my freshman year, but then I had to move out of that towards the end of freshman year, and I shifted to singing in the jazz band at USD, which they had evening classes, and it was an extracurricular and not my focus anymore. It was a lot more manageable, and I learned a lot. It was so fun.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you fearless?
No, I'm a very scaredy cat person.
No!
It's shocking. I hear you. I'm afraid of a lot of things, and I also want a lot of experiences. Luckily, my fears have not stopped me from experiencing a lot of things. I'm a total scaredy cat.
What are you scared of?
Oh my gosh, I'm scared of perishing, you know? I'm scared of my death,
mm-hmm,
and that's a commonly held fear, but if I were a fearless person, I think I would be, you know, flying all over the globe, getting in airplanes, and going on auditions all over the place. I would not be contained to my more local environment. So this, I have this fear of flying because I don't want to fall out of the sky. That mm-hmm. sounds awful. Sounds like no fun at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that fear, I've been more local mm-hmm. since college, and I've been able to appreciate my community more than I think I had planned on doing.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you made that choice for us. You know, I think that's great. But I also, I want to dissuade you that I think, first of all, people who don't have fear are kind of pathological. You know, you need fear. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of performers figure out whether it's intense, you know, private work or beta blockers. They figure sure. out a way that they can work with their fear, but it's not that they don't have it, you know. So when the time is right, you'll find a way, you know. But in the yeah. meantime, Vashon's got you, which is so great.
And
know?
I love being here.
Was it hard to come? How did you decide to come back? Because here you've done this, you know, amazing things at the University of San Diego, and you've started in several different directions. Did you have mixed feelings about coming back?
Or? Oh my gosh, I had no plan. I was zero plans McGee over here. So
yeah,
I had a couple of paths in yeah. my mind. Like I could go towards MMA and debut as a welterweight female fighter. And that would be pretty fun, you know?
Welterweight, what does that mean?
Welterweight is the 170-pound weight class.
Uh-huh.
I could have otherwise gone to the Bahamas and been a lifeguard and like been repairing patches in the shark net at some resort. I had a job offer out there, which wouldn't have been using my anthropology degree for that, nor my athletic experience,
right.
but I did work as a lifeguard in the summertime down in San Diego. So right. I felt like that could be a cool next step to practice being away and in new environments and with discomfort, social discomfort of having like so many strangers around.
Right, right.
Then I thought like, well, let me go home before graduation, visit my parents. I met Ben Steele, who was one of my bridesmaids at my wedding this summer, who had come in to coach the junior crew team. And he essentially offered me a job. I accepted it. I came here and I started coaching the Masters rowing team.
Is that at the high school or where is that?
The Masters rowing team refers to the age classification. So that is anyone college and above.
Oh, okay. And who pays for that? Who is there an association or something?
The Vashon Rowing Club, yeah.
Ah.
Yep.
So they hire you to be a master's yeah. level coach.
They hired me. I came home and then COVID hit
yeah.
and I kind of got planted.
Right, right. But I love that because, you know, so many people graduate from college, I think, and with a certain fear about what they're going to do. And I'm sure you probably had concerns or thoughts, but to be able to find your unique niche like that, it's quite something. And to come back on the island and find your unique niche.
I find the niche conversation perplexing.
Uh-huh.
I feel that everyone has multiple talents, and there's this myth that we've decided to believe that you have to be good at one thing.
Oh, yeah. I don't mean it that way. Yeah, but I hear what you're
okay,
saying.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, yeah. But what I mean by niche is that you're unique. You have a certain, a huge array of talents. And to be able to trust that you'll find your place, that's probably what I mean, rather than get sliced down to have a sliver of you going into one little thing.
Understood.
It's more like trusting that somehow you will find the right place. And that place can evolve. You know, it might be right today and then it'll be, you know, different tomorrow.
I but, super identify with what you're saying.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think it takes a lot of trust. I love that. You have... one of the things that, you know, I'm a secret fan. You don't know that, but I am a secret fan. Because you have this great body, but it's not a typical women's body. Because you just said 170-pound welterweight. So you have a really strong body. Were you always like that, having a really muscular, strong weightlifter kind of body?
I have always been larger than my peers.
Uh-huh. Was that
average.
hard growing
up? It
was up?
Very hard, and uh-huh. I did get bullied for it, and
oh.
I still feel like at times I'm out of place. And I'm also not 170 pounds. I weigh over 200 pounds now.
Oh, okay. Because you have so much muscle.
It is muscle. I also have body fat, you know, like most people have some body fat they're working with, they're grooving with, and I'm no different than that. But even in college on scholarship rowing, I fluctuated between 200 and 215 pounds.
Right.
Rowing 25 hours a week, being extremely active, working really hard.
Yeah.
You know, like that's just my body is predisposed to be dense.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just celebrate that because you're gorgeous. And so you have this beautiful feminine face that, and you, by the way, you're really photogenic because I've seen your pictures online, but then you're also, you've got this big, strong body. And I like it. I mean, I love when they're juxtapositions, you know, that you have, you're not just one thing.
Yes.
You can be both. And when I saw you in Rocky Horror Picture Show, I thought they kind of took advantage of the bothness of you.
Sure.
You know, that you had this, you know, you had this lovely face, but you had this strong body, and that they could put you in a role that was gender fluid.
Totally.
Which was interesting.
Did you get to see my prosthetic penis after the show?
No, I didn't.
I had a really nice packer. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. No, I didn't. I didn't get to see
it. It was wonderful. I loved it.
Yeah. Well, just for folks who don't know, you were a lead character. You were the...
I played Rocky.
You played Rocky. Well, yeah. And Rocky is typically played by a man, mm-hmm. the original, but it has been done by a woman before.
Sure.
But it just seemed to add to the whole craziness, which was perfect to have the gender fluidity.
Totally.
Where we're going, no, she's a man. No, but she looks like a woman, but she's a man, but she looks like a woman. I thought, oh, perfect. You know?
Yeah. I don't know if I'll ever get the chance to play across gender lines again on stage.
Yeah, that
was like a really unique opportunity. In a high trust environment.
Yeah.
My director, Brooke, is also a friend of mine.
Yeah.
It was an amazing experience. And I was also terrified.
Really?
Yeah.
It didn't show, but yeah.
It wasn't the performing part that was worrying me. It was, is this okay? Is this okay that I'm playing a character who has different genitalia than I possess? You know, and will my trans friends be okay with this? And it seemed like everyone was okay with it, so that's great, you know, but of course.
Did you talk about it with them a little?
I did, and it's an ongoing conversation.
What did you learn?
It really seems like it's about intent as well as impact. Impact matters, of course, but the show was essentially cast around me being that character. So from jump, it was accepted, it was understood, and it was built to be not just palatable, but meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
The show also explored not just like the excitement of Rocky Horror. It is so exciting. It's tantalizing. It's titillating is the word I hear a lot. You know, it's really fun. But it also is essentially a story about sexual predation. And taking that seriously is hard to do in a comedic musical theater environment at times. So that was one of the goals as well.
Wow. I was one of the virgins who had never seen Rocky Horror. And I was, you know, it's such a fun show.
Totally.
That it's one of those juxtapositions. It's fun. The music is great. It's lively. It's upbeat. And it's about sexual predation. And it has a yuck factor.
Yes. Yeah.
And we're kind of living in an age that has a big yuck factor.
Totally. Yeah.
And so it's interesting. It would have been interesting to have a conversation about sexual predation after the show. I mean, probably wouldn't have fit because it was late and stuff. But
true. It was late
but
night.
To really sit with that a little more. I've never thought about that. I'm talking today with Maya Solera, weightlifter, rower, actor, singer, belly dancer, and much more.
I think there's definitely space for more conversation to be had, for sure.
Yeah, I know. It's, well, I've been like everybody in this country, you're kind of on the sides of the Epstein files and all. And I was talking to my husband, and he meets with his guy friends for coffee, and I can't remember what it was, but I just said, I think the Epstein files is affecting every woman I know. And I said, tell your friends to go ask their wives and partners, is misogyny still real? And find out what you find out, because this is private, sort of to my age. But I was very moved by the Anita Hill trials. The Anita Hill, when she testified about against Clarence Thomas for some of his sexual activity. Because she wasn't believed, and she was mocked, and she was humiliated, and she was shamed as she appeared before Congress. Every woman I knew supported her and knew what she was
Absolutely.
talking about. So if we'd been in the audience for Rocky Horror, it would have been interesting, to have a safe place for women to say, yuck, I
Yeah.
kind of get it. I kind of get it. Did you have to touch someplace in yourself? I mean, could you just play the character, or did you have to feel some of this dark side to be able to really?
It's easy to slip into that character and have fun with it. It's harder and less pleasant to dive into the darker parts of it. In the second act, there's essentially like a non-consensual dance scene, the floor show where Frankenfurter uses his like sci-fi blast ray to manipulate our ability to move. And then we're all kind of entranced because we can, while feeling victimized by getting stuck, we also see how like we're stuck there listening to his story, and his story makes sense that like he just loves this place. He wants to have a nice time. Isn't everyone having fun? He just wants us to have fun together. Yeah, okay, we understand. So simultaneously understanding and hearing the story of the so-called villain, who then also becomes a victim and probably was a victim beforehand, it's a complex scene.
Yeah. All done with a certain amount of humor and
Yeah.
rah-rah and cheers from the audience and all of that.
With a kick line too. I love a kick line.
Yeah, what's a kick line?
A kick line, it's where you stand in a line and you do the can-can.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, crazy. Crazy. Yeah. But one other piece going back to you, which I loved finding out about, is your experience belly dancing.
Ooh, fun.
Because I have an impression. I wish you would start teaching again on an island, because I'll take your class. I haven't experienced belly dancing, but my impression is that it can be very strengthening for women, particularly who are dealing with complex body image issues, which is probably 99% of us on some level. And I think belly dancing can help with that. Is that your experience?
100%.
Tell me about that.
My first teacher, Bonnie, used to describe
She was on the island
she was on
here?
the island,
Yeah.
yeah. She would describe falling in love with the mirror.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of subverts this sort of forced humility that we're not supposed to like our reflections, that that's too much, that that's
Yeah.
like not humble or not good, not morally
Right,
good.
right.
So she would talk about falling in love with the mirror and allowing yourself to exist in whatever body you're in and just
Yeah.
starting to appreciate that. And she would highlight the differences between our bodies, which, depending on who you are, perhaps that could be really triggering. She did so in a really complimentary way. I felt like it was wonderful. And but it depends on who you are and how you receive that. So when I started teaching, it was really important to me that self-acceptance and body neutrality was a pillar of my teaching, meaning that I don't need you to like how you look in the mirror. I need you to accept that it's okay to look at yourself, that you deserve to exist and take up space, regardless of what your body looks like, and that your body functionality is not hindered by whatever percentage of body fat you have. That you can increase your strength. If you have back pain, you know, you don't have to just lose weight to treat that, which is a common suggestion. Gain strength to support your body. Gain mobility, gain strength. So in the dance room, we talked a lot about how it's okay that you're okay in this body, and that it's okay that you, if you want to change the shape of your body, you have that agency, and I support that. And I talk with my strength clients about this as well. If you have a physique goal, I support you in that. But your shape of your body is the least interesting thing about you to me.
Yeah, and especially like what your BMI or how fat you are and stuff like that, you know. I think I would have loved this Bonnie. You know, I wish she were around still, because she doesn't teach her anymore.
No, she's skedaddled.
Oh, yeah. Come on. Yeah. Boo. But I love that. And it's sort of a secret thing, because in Zumba classes, I love the mirror. I dance with that woman. And for me, it's like, I don't care that I'm not the world's best dancer, or that I, you know, I care that I can see the spirit in the woman who's dancing in the mirror.
Yeah.
And that's the world to me. Is she alive? Is she having fun? Is she finding joy in the movement? That's a woman I'm dancing with, and I dance with her in the mirror.
You know, you brought up fears earlier.
Yeah.
Another fear of mine is that on my deathbed someday, I will regret how much time I spent feeling self-conscious and judging my own body just for the shape it is.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us, not just women, but a lot of women, but men as well, spend minutes, if not hours, a week essentially negging themselves, like giving themselves negative judgment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're in a weight crazy culture still.
Yeah.
You know, and I was thinking, as we're getting more open to different gender possibilities and different preference possibilities in all aspects of life, it would be really nice if we could also do that with bodies.
There's a nice surge. The internet is kind of crazy scary. And if you tune your algorithm just so, you'll get lots of beautiful different shaped bodies on there who are offering the image of their body as a comfort to us.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the thing that I found, I'm teaching myself to draw. And so I spend a lot of time drawing, and I love drawing portraits. And one of the things that's really healing about drawing portraits, it's almost, I get teary about this, really, is that all faces are beautiful.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had issues about my face and that my nose is different, blah, blah, blah. But when I'm an artist and I'm drawing, that fades away, and it's interesting.
When you sat down, I was thinking to myself how I like your face.
Oh, you're gorgeous. Thank you. Well, you know, it's that place where faces shouldn't have to look like each other.
No.
And when you're, again, as an artist, as someone doing portraits, the least interesting is a beautiful model in a stock photo.
Yeah.
A gorgeous done model or a woman who's had her wrinkles removed is boring.
Yeah.
I want somebody who's got quirks and a funny nose and jowls and wrinkles and aliveness.
Yes.
That's what I want. And I was saying, I think the same thing applies to bodies.
Yes.
And I also do life drawing. I haven't gone to any classes here on the island, but I do it online. And I love it when I get like a very big woman with just rolls and rolls of fat, because it's gorgeous to draw.
Totally.
You know, I don't want to draw a nymph. I mean, I could. That would be fun too. But
sure.
But just to see how, like, an artist can look at things like that, and you just see it from a whole different perspective. But when you put our narrow cultural lens on, then you have to have a certain nose, a certain weight, a certain body size that almost nobody matches. And if they do, it's probably because they've been starved.
Yeah.
You know?
I advertise myself as a body neutral coach in my profession, and yet 90% of my clients still come to me seeking physique change.
Yeah.
Which I do think it's fair. If you want to have control over the vessel that you're living in, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
But not at the detriment of your health.
Yeah, I get it. I'm talking today with Maya Solera, weightlifter, rower, actor, singer, belly dancer, and much more. Well, you know, I admit when I was in my 20s, there was a period of time where I felt like, you know, if I could just lose a little more weight, and I did, it was like having control over a life that felt out of control.
Yeah.
So I can, you know, eat less or live on lettuce or whatever I was doing.
You went rabbit mode.
I went rabbit, but I went rabbit and then I'd go eat ice cream. You know, it was that kind of diet.
The cycle.
It was kind of nutty, but I exercised a lot and I was thin because I felt like I didn't have the control of my world that I wanted. So I would control my body. But now it feels like, oh, my poor dear, you know, better to learn how to deal with a world that's out of control than have to treat your body so harshly, you know.
You know, with the Epstein files.
Yeah.
I've seen a few feminists posting online about how, hey, everybody, let's stop idealizing beauty standards that come straight out of pedophilia. You know, why does my vagina need to be bald? Why do my armpits?
Yeah.
Why do I need to look younger in order to be more attractive? That's troubling.
It is. Yes, and especially when you feel like it turns women into commodities.
Yes.
Who can actually be sold.
Yes.
And how degrading, and yet somehow, you know, there's a multi-billion dollar industry.
Yeah.
That's making a lot of money.
Yeah.
On telling women. And, you know, there's been this counter argument over the years that you don't have to do that, but we haven't taken a lot of ground. You know,
it's hard. It's really brutal out there.
It is. It is. You know, one of the good things about aging, you know, is you get to a certain point and you're going to have jowls and you're going to have wrinkles and it stops mattering so much. You know, it's really good. And so I think it's harder in your 20s, but who knows? You know, I can't speak for somebody in their 20s right now, but
it feels like life has gotten easier for the most part as I've gotten older.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the same for everyone, but that's the advice I also hear from my elders.
Yeah.
That you start caring a lot less.
You do. You start caring, and you're not, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm lucky to be happily partnered. Mm. So I'm not on the market. You know, I'm on the market, and so I can say whatever I want to say.
Mm.
And
yes.
I can walk however I want to walk. And I probably always could. But it is nice to do that from the security that I'm not trolling for a mate.
Yeah. None of that impacts your eligibility.
No. Yeah. And truthfully, you know, like the man that I married could have cared less about all that stuff.
Yeah.
He wanted my spirit, not my perfect body. But it's
I want men like that all around.
Yeah, well, you got married. Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank
was that
you
a
so
big
much.
Deal?
Big deal.
Big deal. Tell me, what was it a big deal to cross the line or, you know?
Well, it was a big deal to find someone who doesn't care what my vessel that I'm living in looks like. He just wants me to be healthy and happy within reason. I thought growing up, after experiencing a lot of rejection and bullying, that I would die alone. Which, I mean, depending on philosophically where you land, you could say that we do that anyways. But
yeah.
I didn't think that I would get married. And that made it the thing I wanted more than anything.
Oh,
in the world,
yeah.
You know? And luckily or unluckily, I have this large muscular body that I live in that acts as kind of a filter for people who want to fuck around and who aren't.
What do you mean as a filter for people who want to fuck around?
What I mean is I'm not as approachable as someone who is smaller and more conventionally feminine looking.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I get what you mean.
Yeah. You know, I watched Sinners
uh-huh.
a couple weeks ago, and there were two female love interests in the movie. One was conventionally a total hottie. She was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The other woman, gorgeous, but large,
mm-hmm.
muscular. It was amazing. And both of these women, they're the love interests of the two twins of this, like, conventionally attractive man. And to see essentially, like, the image of the same man partnered with two very different people, visually very different people, was so soothing.
Oh, nice.
It was so inspiring. And it also brings to mind how limited our scope of view is on what feminine looks like, when in reality, like, it's not just now that we're starting to have muscular women. We've always been around.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Muscular and heavier women.
Yeah, muscular women, fat women, teensy weensy women, women of all sizes and shapes and postures. You know, we've always been here.
Yeah, it's been inspiring. I watched, there's a woman named Rachel Martin who does a show called Wild Card on NPR where she interviews celebrities. She interviewed Oprah after mm-hmm. Oprah put out her book. Oprah was so damn real about her weight, about her weight and the shame that she felt, and also being, you know, one of the most powerful women in the world and being a target for all the haters who are going to want to shame her for her weight, and to realize, honey, that's your body build.
Yeah,
that's your body build. And she's also, you know, it's helping her to be able to do a weight loss drug. And she's just saying, that's how I need to do it. And it's like, go, Oprah. Because she just opens doors for people. But her, you know, I think of that time in her career where she tried to go on fasting diets to show that she could lose weight and be, you know, a thinner Oprah. And you go, oh, why did, you know, maybe that inspired women to think they could lose weight. But what a terrible thing to have to do that on a national stage.
Yeah, with a big audience.
With a big audience and basically starving yourself and, you know, working yourself just so that you could hopefully fit something your body was not intended to fit. You know?
And what's the motive?
What's the motive? Right. Yeah.
The motive makes it for me. If somebody, you know, is having health complications,
yeah,
muscle mass will help with that. And sometimes weight loss helps with that.
Sure.
But if somebody's is in like a circle of a throng of no good friends who are shaming them, or like they're just feeling so out of place in society that they want to shrink themselves. That's part of my feminist agenda, is like, let's stop shrinking women both politically and physically.
Right, right. Yeah, I love that, because I think committing to not shrinking women physically mm-hmm. also opens the door to not shrinking women.
Yeah.
And we're still effing shrinking women in this country. I cannot believe this. It's 2026.
Yeah.
And there are still so many shrinkers out there, although I think it is changing, but it's one of those things I think is probably one of your life gifts, is because you were blessed with a different body, because you've gone through what you've gone through, you can talk to women with a voice that's grounded in your own life story and your authenticity and your skills, to be able to offer them something that brings skills and empathy together. I always love that, because it feels like whatever suffering you may have had, if you, you know, did along the way, now it's your gift.
Hmm. That's a really good compliment. Thank you.
Well, I mean it. You know, it's like, go girl. You know, it's really lovely to, yeah. And also what, you know, we started the show with, of saying that you don't have to be one thing. You can be a rower, a weight lifter, an actor, a singer, a belly dancer, and probably some other things as well. You don't have to choose. You know, you can
don't.
Be all of those, and you can have a body that's stronger than most men and a feminine face. You can, you know, you can do whatever.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've gotten feedback from friends in the past about being surprised that I have multiple skills, which is why I brought that up.
Yeah, yeah.
That it seems like we as a community believe that we only are allowed to have one skill, that like more than that is greedy. Don't be greedy. Don't show off. But to be yourself is to actualize your skills.
Yeah.
And if you are holding back on me, sister, if you're not bringing all your skills to the table, I don't know you. You're giving me part of you.
Yeah. And the other piece that I've discovered is, you know, I wrote a book about being creative later in life. And, you know, a lot of people are mumble mouth about I'm an artist, but I'm not really. I'm a writer, but not really. That doesn't help people.
No.
Because I think when I say I've discovered art late in life and I'm going for it and I'm writing later in life and I'm going for it, other people just, they perk up and they go, well, I could too. And maybe I'll do that. But when you're playing small, you know, because I don't think what we're talking about, Maya, is being better than other people.
No.
It's just saying play it full out with what you got.
Yeah.
And when you play full out, then other people go, oh, she's playing full out. And she's not trying to fit in to being what everybody else looks like or does. She's doing full out Maya.
Yes.
You know, I could do full out Sally.
And the more we do that, the broader the spectrum becomes.
Yeah.
Even less competitive now.
Yeah.
There are even more roles to fill between me and so-and-so.
Yeah. It's beautiful. What's ahead for you? What are you looking at? Do you have any? I mean, getting married this year. And incidentally, I love your husband because he's a trainer at the gym. And I love how he looks at you. Oh, my God. Steve and I, my husband, we look and we go, that's it. That's it, you know? Because he just looks so delighted when he just sees you.
He's the kindest man I've ever known.
Yeah, he's a love. But that's another thing. When people see a couple that respects each other and delights in each other's presence, you can feel there's a kind of energy that goes out. And people like that, you know? Feels good. It feels like, oh, a little bit of love, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But you were saying, I interrupted you.
What's next is I'm learning to play bass.
Ooh.
I'm getting more into songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote two songs for 1448, one for each night, a little theme song.
Oh, did you do the music? Did you write part of the music? Because I saw you in the band.
Yeah, I did. Ooh. I wrote one song for each night.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a novice songwriter.
Right.
But I got to bring those songs to the band, and they are experts.
Mm-hmm.
So they tweaked and tuned and they offered suggestions until they were like really cool pieces of music. And then we got to perform them. So within 24 hours, conception to performance for both songs. And the day after, I was like, I'm on a roll. I got to write one more song. So I wrote an anti-ICE protest song.
Oh,
so
cool.
My next project is actualizing that. Producing, recording, filming a music video for it. I've been putting feelers out for people to fill the parts in it. So I've got a nice operatic trio to fill in the little tidbits within the verses and phrases, and amazing instrumentalists who are willing to help me with this project.
I love that. I love that. In fact, you know, I do a weekly blog on Substack, and one of my themes periodically is, where's the music for the revolution?
Ooh.
You know, I want, because back in the 60s there was a lot of protest music, and I'm wondering, where is our music that says this shall not be?
Yeah,
you know. And you know, yay Bad Bunny.
Yeah,
his
Bad
famous
Bunny.
No Ice, you know, in front of the whole world.
It was amazing that he won the Super Bowl.
It was wonderful. We won the Grammy, and then I heard the No Ice speech, and see, because I'm a little bit of cultural slow.
Mm.
I wasn't up on the Bad Bunny thing until I heard those words.
Mm.
No Ice, he's using his gift, his stage, to say something so important, and he has power to do it.
Yeah.
And then he snuck it back into the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I love that guy.
Yeah, yeah. He's amazing.
Amazing. So we want your No Ice song, too.
I'll work on it.
When do you think it'll come out?
My goal is end of February. It's feeling a little bit, since it's like not within this 1448 context of like, you got to spit it out quick.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm feeling a little more perfectionistic about it.
Yeah,
so I'm trying to hustle up.
Yeah, hustle up. It doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be, you know, good enough to get out. Because these times, hopefully, you know, before too long, we will have no ice. But in the meantime, we need the music. So, yeah. Right. So Maya Solera, thank you so much. I am delighted to get to know you better. It's so fun. And I'm also, you've opened my eyes to, you know, the possibilities of creativity at age 30. So thank you for that.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon 101.9 FM for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.